They had fought with terrible savagery. For how long, he could not guess. Two indomitable beasts spilling out their hot, steaming blood, lashing out in rage, staggering in pain, claws tearing, slashing deep, fangs punching through hide and thick muscle. The stone floor of the chamber had grown slick, the air hot and fetid. And overhead, looming above the ruined carcass of the Azath house, the huge wound fulminated, the edges burning, sizzling as if weeping acid. Gruntal did not even see the moment the first of the dragons came through. He and Kilava were locked together, claws raking each other's flanks down to the bone, when something like a hurricane wind slammed them down onto the unyielding ground. Pulverized rock billowed out, filling the chamber even as enormous cracks opened on the rough walls. Stunned by the thunderous concussion, Gruntal pulled away from Kilava. Yet the rage would not leave him, and he felt his god howling somewhere deep inside his chest, a creature held back for too long by Kilava's denial, and now it clawed its way free. She could no longer resist him, could no longer find the strength to defy what was coming.
I warned you.
The dragon filled the chamber, impossibly huge, wings hammering at the walls. Gruntal understood then that the creature was trapped by the ancient heavy stone of the cavern walls. It needed to unleash its sorcery, to shatter these confines, to open the way for the hundreds of other dragons crowding the gate. He must strike now. The roar that tore out from his throat was Trake's own, a god's call to war. The power within him becoming a thing of agony, Gruntal's limbs coiled, lowering him into a crouch, and then he leapt. The dragon's neck arched, the head snapped down, jaws opening wide. He slammed into the creature's neck, claws sinking deep, his fangs burying themselves in the dragon's throat. Scales broke as Gruntal's jaws tightened, closing on the windpipe. The dragon reared in shock, and with a convulsive motion, blood poured into Gruntal's mouth. As he clung to the creature's writhing neck, his weight began to pull the dragon down. Wings cracked on the stone floor, talons gouged wounds in the rock and then scraped frantically. The impact when the dragon struck the ground almost tore Gruntal loose, but he managed to hold on, the muscles of his shoulders, neck and jaws bunching until they creaked. He could hear the desperate wheezing of breath and tightened his death grip. The dragon reared a second time, lifting Gruntal into the air. And then Kilava struck him with all the force of a battering ram. The dragon's throat was ripped wide open in a torrent of gore. But Gruntal was falling, Kilava's own fangs scoring deep across his shoulder blades. They pounded against the stone floor, burst apart, Gruntal scrabbling to find his footing, twisting to find Kilava, to kill her once and for all. A dying dragon was not yet done. Its jaws slammed down on Gruntal. Fangs long as scimitars impaled him. He was lifted from the ground and then flung through the air. Bones exploded inside his mangled flesh when he struck the wall. Leaving a glittering crimson streak, he slid down the stone to slump gasping, too broken to move. The dragon staggered, head swinging round, eyes blazing as they fixed on him. Jaws opened and sorcery roiled out in a torrent. Gruntal heard Trake's death cry, and that howl itself seemed to catch fire in the conflagration of draconic magic. It raged around him, tore deep into his ruined body. And all at once his god left him, stumbling away, away from this realm. A trail, another cave, a place of darkness, a place to lie down and die.
Again, you damned fool, you never learn. And now it's too late.
The dragon careened against the far wall, sank down, spilling out the last of itself. But above it, in that tearing wound, another was clawing its way through. The cavern simply disintegrated as Alaint's sorcery annihilated the last barriers surrounding Starvald Demolaine. Beyond, the deep snows erupted in clouds of scalding steam. The ground itself was torn away, leaving nothing but swirling chaos. in clouds of spinning dust and pelting rubble, in the wildfires of chaotic magic, the dragons returned to the world.
In my dreams, a blackened cat, a thing lying bleeding, gasping, dying. Blackened in my dreams, I saw not her, but myself. Dear Kilava, you did warn me, and I did not listen. And when I warned Drake, tiger of summer and god of war, he did not listen. You fool, you needed wisdom in the one you chose, Drake, not just another damned version of you, with all the same useless deadly flaws. All that time stretching away behind me now, solid as stone, every shape, every rise and every dip, worn away in these winds of dying. Stonny, see what I have done, or failed to do. You were right to refuse me. I always thought bigger than I could deliver. I always wanted what I could not hold. And I saw it in your eyes, the day I stood before you, when I promised that I would come back. I saw in your eyes you knew I wouldn't. You knew you would never see me again. Ah, my love, so many truths come too late. And this love, it is the last thing I have left, the last thing to hold on to. All I ever wanted, feel it slip away, slip away. Woman, you should never have let me go. I should have given you that power over me. If I had, you would have understood. You would have believed my love for you. And if you had believed in that moment, I would have believed too. How could I not? This is my fault. I saw that then and I see it now. My fault. Stonny, my love, I am sorry.
Time that stretched behind him forever, that closed in and became solid, that beckoned ahead with a darkness almost within reach, then ended. By the time she staggered to his side, she saw that he was dead. Assembled into her Imas form, she sat down weakly beside his carcass, lifted her gaze to the empty, dust-wreathed sky. The last of them, gone now. Out into the world. She had known that there would be hundreds of them, but still, the sight of that exodus had stunned her. Blood pooled beneath her, mixing with that of Gruntal, this noble fool lying so still beside her. There was nothing more heartbreaking than to look upon a dead beast, a thing stripped of its terrible strength, its perfect majesty. And there was something still crueler when that beast was a hunter, a predator. Our rival. Not killed for food, no. Killed for existing, killed for the presumption of competition. The predator fights to the last. It refuses to surrender. Hunt it down, corner it. See those bared fangs, listen to its fury and its fear and its noble defiance. You understood all of this, Gruntal. You understood the inescapable, profound tragedy that is the beast that hunts but dares to challenge our domination. I did not mean to take your life. She knew she was badly hurt. She knew she might not survive this, even without the power of his god, whom she had kept away until the dragon's arrival. He had been extraordinary. Had he not turned upon the Elaint? Yes, he would have killed me. Gruntal, I will remember you. This I swear. Here, in the cracks in my heart. I will curse Drake until the end of my days. But you, brother of the hunt, I will remember. Hearing a scrabble of stones, she lifted her head. The pair of Emlava had returned and now edged towards her. She sensed their distress, their grief.
He lives, she whispered. My husband lives, for now. As for what comes, I wish I had an answer,
The realm was dying on all sides, disintegrating into dust as all dreams must do when the last dreamer is gone. When she leaned back, closed her eyes, she felt the world shifting beneath her. So gentle now, sweet as the rocking of a ship.
Husband, was I wrong to do this?
She looked over to see the two saber-toothed cats lying down beside Gruntle's carcass, as if to give him warmth, as if to make him their own. Chapter 19. Not even the dead know the end to war. Iskar Jarak.
What are you doing?
Withal cinched tight the last straps and reached for the black-scaled gauntlets.
I can't just sit here anymore, he said, since it seems we're all going to die anyway.
He glanced up at her and shrugged. Her lips were dry, chapped. Her eyes were ringed in red, hollowed with exhaustion.
What of me?
She asked in a whisper.
You will leave me alone?
Sand, there are no chains on that throne.
But there are!
No, and there's no law says you got to sit there until the end. Why give them the glory of dragging you down from it, their delight at seeing fresh Andean blood splashing the day's steps? Piss on them! Come with me! Die with the ones giving their lives to defend you!
She looked away.
I do not know how to fight.
Doesn't matter, he said,
rising from where he'd been sitting on the stone steps at the base of the throne. He took up the heavy mace he'd found, along with this arcane armor, in a dust-thick crypt far below the palace.
Look at me, too old for this by half.
He picked up the shield, slipping his arm through the straps. She did look at him then.
That's not Andean armor.
Didn't think it was, he replied, else it would never have fitted me. Better yet, it's not the kind that needs two people to put on. And the leather bindings, they don't seem to have aged at all.
How could I bear it withal, seeing them die?
You sit here fighting your own war, Sand. If their dying in your imagination is easier for you to bear, it's because you don't see the blood. You don't hear the cries. The price they're paying you won't even deign to witness.
Did I make any bold claims to courage?
You make plenty of claims, he said wearily, but none of them come close to courage.
Go then, she hissed. I am done with you.
He studied her and then nodded, walked from the throne room. Sandalath Drukorlat leaned back on the throne, closed her eyes.
Now, she muttered, I have my very own ghost.
The life that was, the one she had just killed.
There's courage in doing that. And if it felt easy, well, we know that's a lie. But a gentle one, gentle as a kiss never taken, a moment slipping past, not touched, not even once.
The soldier who walked in then, why, she knew him well. She could see through his armor, right through to his beating heart, and such a large, strong heart. She could see, too, all his bones, scarred with healed breaks, and beyond that, the floor of the chamber. Because this soldier's arrival had been a long, long time ago, and the one seated on this throne, before whom he now knelt, was not Sandalath Drukorlat. The soldier was looking down, and then he was laughing. The sound was warm with love, softened by some unknown regret.
"Gods below," said a voice from the throne, seeming to come from the dark wood behind her head. "How is it I cannot even remember your name?"
The soldier was grinning when he looked up.
"Lord, when was the last time a warden of the Outer Reach visited the throne room of Karkanas? Even I cannot answer that."
But Anamanda was not yet prepared to excuse himself this failing.
"Have I not seen you before? Did not your commander at the Reach speak to me of you?"
"Perhaps, Lord, the praise was faint, if it existed at all. Shall I ease your dismay, Lord?"
Sandalath saw a hand rise from where one of her own rested on the arm of the chair.
His hand, pointing, No, just the gesture, just that.
No need. Warden Spinok Durav. The soldier smiled and nodded.
Upon word of your summons, Lord, I have come, as at that time I was the ranking officer in the Reach.
Where, then, is Kalat Hastain?
An event at the gate, Lord.
Starvald Demelain? I have heard nothing of this.
It has been only a week, Lord, since he set out for it.
What manner of event was this, do you know?
The word that came to us from the Watchers did not suggest urgency or dire threat, Lord. An awakening of foreign energies. Modest, but worth closer examination.
Very well. Then, Spinok Durav, it shall be you.
I am ever at your call, Lord. What is it that you wish me to do?
And Amanda's answer stole all humor from the soldier's face. And, she recalled, it was never to return. The peace of the forest belied the horror waiting ahead. Water dripped from moss, ran like tears down channels in the lichen covering the boles of the trees. Somewhere, above the canopy, heavy clouds had settled, leaking rain. Withal would have welcomed the cool drops, the sweet kisses from heaven. He needed to be reminded of things beyond all this. The throne room and the woman he had left behind, and before him the first shore with its heaps of corpses and pools of thickening blood. But this forest was too narrow to hold all that he wanted, and to pass from one misery to the next took little effort, and it was not long before he could hear the battle ahead, and between the towering trunks of the ancient trees he now caught flashes of shimmering light.
Where the world ends, for all of us.
He was done with her haunting his dreams, done with all the demands that he make his love for Sandalath into some kind of weapon, a thing with which to threaten and cajole. And Sand had been right in rejecting him. No, she was Mother Dark's problem now. The chewed-up trail dipped before climbing to the ridge overlooking the first shore, and as he scrabbled his way up the slope, the sounds of fighting built into a roar. Two more steps, a thick root for a handhold, and then he was on the ridge, and before him was a scene that stole the strength from his legs, that closed a cold hand about his heart.
Who, then, has seen such a thing?
Before him, 7,000 bodies, Lethary, Shake, and there, along the base of Lightfall, to either side of that breach, how many dead and dying Leosan? 10,000? 15? The numbers seemed incomprehensible. The numbers gave him nothing. In his mind he could repeat them as if voicing a mantra, as his gaze moved from one horror to the next, and then down to where the knot of defenders fought at the very mouth of the wound, fought to deny the Leosan a single foothold upon the shore, and still none of it made sense, even when it did.
It is the last stand. That is what this is. They keep coming, we keep falling, an entire people face to face with annihilation.
All at once he wanted to turn round, march back to Carcanus, to the palace, into the throne room, and
what? It's not her fault. There's nothing here she ever wanted. Gods below, Sand, I begin to understand your madness. No one here will accept surrender, no matter what you say. You could open your own throat there on that throne, and it wouldn't matter. These people will die defending a corpse on a throne in a corpse of a city. The cause stopped meaning anything some time ago. I should have seen that.
Two girls were among the dead and dying, stumbling from body to body. They were painted head to toe in crimson. One of them was shrieking, as if seeking to tear her own voice to pieces, to destroy it for all time. The other careered among the corpses, hands over her ears. There were no reserves. All who remained standing were at the breach, where Yedan Derig still stood, still fought. But what of Yan Tovis? What of the Queen of the Sheikh? If she was in that dreadful press, withal could not see her. If she had died, she was buried beneath her fallen subjects. He found that he was breathing hard, his heart pounding.
The grip of the mace was slick in his hand. He set it down, reached for the ornate, full-visored helm slung from his knife belt, fumbled to loosen the clasp, as if his fingers had forgotten how to work. Finally, tugging it free, he worked the helm onto his head, felt its weight settle. He closed the clasp under his chin, the iron hoop tearing at the beard on his throat. The sounds of the battle dulled then, faint as distant breakers on some unseen strand. A louder squeal when he set the visor and locked it in place, and the scene before him was suddenly split, broken up by the chaotically angled bars. His breaths now filled the confined space. Withal collected the mace, straightened, brought the shield round to guard his left side, and lurched into motion. Someone else had wrested control of his body, his legs now carrying him down onto the strand, his eyes searching for a path through the pale, motionless bodies, the hand holding his weapon and the forearm bearing the weight of the shield. They no longer belonged to him, no longer answered to his will.
"You do not willingly walk into a battle like this. How can you? No, some other force takes you there, moves you like a pawn, a puppet, and you watch yourself going ever forward, and you are baffled, disbelieving. And all that fear, it's hollowed out, just an empty place now, and the roar outside is lost to the roar inside, your own blood, your breaths. And now your mouth is parched, and you would kill your own mother for a drink of water. But of course you won't, because that would be wrong, and that thought makes you want to laugh. But if you do, you know that you will lose it. You know that if that laughter starts, it won't stop. Was this how it was in my first battle? Was this why I could remember so little? Only frozen moments, those moments that reach up and take you by the throat? That make you see all that you don't want to see, remember all that you pray to forget? Is this how it was?" He was clambering over the heaped bodies now, the flesh beneath him cold, taking the imprints of his feet and knees like damp clay. He looked back at the dents and wondered at their wrongness. And then he was moving on, and before him was a ragged wall, lethary and shake on their knees, or bent over, or trying to drag themselves out from a forest of legs, shielding wounds. He thought he would see weeping faces, bawling despair, but the pain-twisted faces were dry, and every cry that clawed past his own roaring self was one of raw pain. "Just that, nothing more. A sound without complications. Can you hear it? If there could be one God with one voice, this is the sound it would make to stop us in our endless madness. But look on, withal. See the truth. We do not listen."
He made his way past these exhausted and wounded comrades, pushed his way into the heaving mass. The stench rocked him. Abattoir, sewer, cutter's floor. Thick enough to choke him, he struggled against vomiting, here inside this helm. No, he would not do that. Could not. Faces now on all sides, none speaking, and the look in their eyes was flat, flatter than anything he'd ever seen. And they were all straining towards the front line, moving up to take their places, to fill the gaps, the unending gaps, as if to say, "If you will kill us all, kill me next, but do not think it will be easy." Suddenly he felt ready for this. "Walk until something bars your path, then stand until you fall. Whoever said life was complicated?" The channels and currents had carried him to the left flank, well away from that immovable knot at the center, where a sword's laughter had taken for itself all the shore's madness, every last scrap of it. He saw Brevity, though at first he did not recognize her. That solid, handsome face, the wry look in her eyes, all gone. In their place, a mask of wet blood over dried blood, over blood that had turned into black tar. A slash had opened one cheek, revealing two rows of red molars. There was nothing sardonic left, but she commanded that front line, her will clenched like a fist. Off her shield side, two Shake fell and three Leosin pushed in to widen the gap. Eyes widening at the perfect, breathtaking simplicity of what was needed of him, withal surged to meet them. This was something new. Jan Tovis could feel it, yet Anderig had advanced the line to the very edge of the breach, and there they had held against the Leosan. This time there was to be no foothold. He would refuse them a single step upon the strand. He had explained nothing, and as she fought, crowded hard against that wound, from which Leosan poured like blood, she began to realize that this time there would be no respite, not until one side or the other fell to the very last soldier. What had begun would not end until the last sword swung down or sank deep in writhing flesh. How had he known? What had he done on the other side of the gate? What had he seen? She caught glimpses of her brother there, where the terrifying pealing laughter went on, where blood fountained, where Leosan bodies piled ever higher, and they stood on them, fighting for balance, face to face, weapons flashing. Glimpses, a face she barely knew, so twisted was it, the husked sword dragging him past exhaustion, past all reason of what the human body could withstand. Of his face she could see the white bones beneath translucent flesh, could see all the veins and arteries and the root mat of vessels, could see the bloody tears that streamed down from his eyes. Night had come to the Sheik. The sand had measured the time in a kind of stillness, a kind of silence that was beneath all this, and the grains slipped down, and now had come the eternity just before dawn, the time of the watch. He stood, he fought, his stance wide to find purchase on a hill of bodies.
See him, in the eternity before dawn, when among mortals courage is at its weakest, when fear sinks talons on the threshold and will not let go, when one awakens to such loneliness as to twist a moan from the chest. But then, you feel it, breath catching, you feel it. You are not alone. The watch stands guard.
They would not break, would not yield, all those who stood now with him. Instead, at his sides, they died and died. She was a thing of ash and blood, molded into something vaguely human-shaped, tempered by the crushed bone of her ancestors, and she fought on, because her brother would not yield, because the very border that was Lightfall and the wound had now become the place where it would be decided. And still the Leosan came, lunging wild-eyed from the swirling chaos. Most did not even have time to react, to make sense of the nightmare world into which they had just stumbled, before a pike plunged into them or a sword lashed down. And so they died, there on that threshold, fouling those who came after them. She had no idea how many of her people were left, and a vision that had come upon her a century ago, maybe longer, of Yedan Derig standing alone before the breach, the very last to fall, now returned to her, not as some dreadful imagining, but as prophetic truth.
And all because I would not kneel to the shore.
There was no dragon challenging the breach. If one came, she now would not hesitate. She would fling herself down, trusting in Yedan to kill the damned thing, trusting in the power of her own blood to claim that dying creature, hold it fast, grasp hold of its blood and lift it, higher, yet higher, to make a wall, to seal this gate.
Why did I wait? Why did I resist? Why did I believe my freedom was worth anything? Why did I imagine that I had the right to choose my destiny, or choose to deny it? Only the defeated kneel. Only slaves, the ones who surrender their lives into the hands of others. But now I would do it, to save my people, this pitiful remnant. Come to me now, my child witches. See me kneel. Bleed me out. I am ready.
Leosan fell to her sword, onto his knees before her, as if mocking her sudden desire, and over his head she saw her brother, saw him turn, saw him find her, their gazes locked. Jan Tovis loosed a sob and then nodded. Yedan Derig threw out his arms to the sides, roared,
"Back 10 paces! And hail welcome to the dragon!"
She watched Spinnok Durav enter the throne room yet again.
and wondered at the absence of his smile. That face did not welcome solemn regard, wore it like an ill-fitting mask. Made it lined where it should be smooth, made the eyes flinch when he looked up to meet the gaze of the one seated on this throne. He smelled of burnt wood, as if he had dragged the death of a forest behind him, and now the smoke swirled round his legs, his kneeling form, like serpents only she could see.
"Highness," he said.
"Speak to me,"
said a strained, half-broken voice,
"on the disposition of my legions."
"Certain leaders among us," Spinnock replied, eyes lowering to fix on the dais, or perhaps a pair of booted feet, "are in their souls unleashed. 'Tis the scent upon this wind."
"If the fire draws closer, the city will burn."
"Against that conflagration, Highness, only you can stand, for it is by your will we see that now. We see your grief, though we do not yet understand its meaning. What pact have you made with Silana? Why does she lay waste to all the land? Why does she drive ever closer to proud Carcanus?"
"Proud?"
The word was a sneer.
"We have journeyed long, Highness, from the outer marches, on 100 hidden paths only a thief would remember. And then the violence took our leaders, the blood of Elaint."
"Cursed blood, Highness? No. It poisoned me once. You know that, Spinnock Durav. You were there."
He bowed his head still further.
"I saw what was done, yes. I saw what you sought to hide away.
I did not ask them to come back. I didn't."
He lifted his gaze, tilted his head.
"I sense this is important. Highness, who did you not ask to come back?"
Hard, cold hands closed on her face. She felt them like her own, felt the long fingers like prison bars, smelled the wax of melted candles.
"Can't you hear it?"
"Hear what, Highness?"
"Their screams, the dying. Can't you hear it?"
"Highness, there is a distant roar, Lightfall."
"Lightfall!"
Her eyes widened, but she could not speak, could not think.
"What is happening?"
he demanded.
"What is happening? Everything is happening. Are they in disarray, your troops?"
He shook his head.
"No, Highness. They wait on Blind Galan's road."
"Blind Galan's road? There was no such road. Not then. Not when Spinnock Durav came to kneel before his lord. I have lost my mind."
A sudden whimper, and she shrank back in the throne.
"Take off that mask, Spinnock Durav. You were never so old."
"Who did you ask not to come back?"
She licked her lips.
"She should have taken the throne. She was a true queen, you see, of the Sheikh, and the Lethary, the ones she saved. I don't belong here. I told them."
But Spinnock Durav was on his feet, a growing horror on his face.
"Highness, Sandalas Drukolat, what is that roar?"
She stared at him, moved her mouth to make words, failed, tried a second time.
"The breach, they've come again. Tell Anomander, tell him. No one can stop them but him, the Sheikh, dying. Oh, Mother, bless us! Dying!"
Her shriek echoed in the vast room, but he was already leaving. Out in the corridor now, shouting orders, but that voice too desperate, too frantic, not like Spinnock Durav at all. Lord Nimanda Golit Anomandaris, firstborn of the fraught union of Son of Darkness and the first daughter of Draconis, fell to his knees.
His body trembled as he struggled against the blood of the Elaint and its terrible need, its inescapable necessity. Where was Skintik, Desra, Nenanda? The stones of the riverbed crunched beside him, and he felt hands clutch his shoulders.
Resist this, Lord. Where the last two left, resist the call of the Elaint.
He lifted his head, baffled, and stared into Korlat's ancient eyes.
What? Who?
She has commanded Silana. She has summoned the Warren of Fire and set upon the dragon the madness of her desire. Do you understand? She would burn this realm to the ground.
Gasping, he shook his head.
Who sits upon the throne? Who would do this in Mother Dark's name?
Can you not smell the blood, Nemanda? There is war here. I don't know who, but souls are falling in appalling numbers, and on the throne of darkness sits a queen in despair.
He blinked.
A queen? Where is Apsalara?
Korlat looked across the river.
Into the city, Lord.
And Spinnok?
He has followed to beseech the queen, to make sense of this. Nemanda, listen to me. Your soul-taken kin, they have succumbed to Silana's power. She now commands a storm. If we now veer, you, myself, Dathanar, and Prazek, we shall be forced to fight them. In the skies above Karkanus, we shall annihilate each other. This must not be.
Nemanda forced himself to his feet.
No, Silana, she must be stopped.
Only the queen can command her to stop, Nemanda.
Then take me to her.
When Korlat hesitated, he studied her, eyes narrowing.
What is it, Korlat? Who is this queen of darkness?
I fear... no matter. Go then, Nemanda. Convince her to release Silana.
But where will you go?
The war. I will go with Dathanar and Prazek. Lord, I believe I know where the battle will be found. I hope that I am wrong. But go, walk where your father walked.
How long ago was it? She could not remember. She was young. The night before, she had taken a boy to her bed, to remind herself that not everything was pain. And if she later broke his heart, she'd not meant to. But this was a new day, and already the night just passed seemed centuries away. She'd been with her brother's hunting party on the spoor of Tenag. The day was warm, the sun bright and pleased with itself. They heard his laughter first, a deep thing, hinting of thunder, and they followed it down into a depression thick with chokecherry and dogwood. A figure lying against a slope. He was Imas, like them, but they did not recognize him, and this in itself was startling, disturbing. She could see at once, when she and her kin gathered close, that his wounds were fatal. It was a wonder he still lived, and an even greater wonder that he could laugh as he did. And through all the agony in his eyes, that mirth still shone when he looked up at them. Her brother was first to speak, because that was his way.
What manner of stone do you wear?
Stone, the dying man replied, showing a red smile. Metal, my friends, armor, a Thel Akai gift.
Where have you come from?
Clanless, I wondered. I came upon an army, my friends.
There is no army.
Jaghat, Thel Akai, others. They were silenced by this. The Jaghat were despised, feared, but an army of Jaghat? Impossible. Were they now at war, her clan, her people? If so, then they would all die. An army of Jaghat? The words alone opened like Omptos Felak in her soul.
I joined them, said the man, and then, lifting a mangled hand, he added, Set no crime at my feet for that. Because, you see,
I am the last left. They died, all of them. The Jackhut, the Fel Akai, the Jack, all dead.
What enemy has come among us? Her brother asked, his eyes wide with fear.
None but that has always been with us, friends. Think well on my words. When you slay a beast, when you hunt as you do now and blood is spilled, when you close upon the beast in its dying, do you not see its defiance, its struggle to the very last moment? The legs that kick, the head that tries to lift, the blood frothing from the nostrils?
They nodded. They had seen. And each time they had felt something fill their hearts, choke in their throats. One needed to bite back on that. Things were as they were.
Bless the Jackhut,
the stranger said, his head falling back. He laughed, but it was short, frail.
Why defy death when you cannot help but fail? They would tell you why. No, they would show you why. If only you had the courage to see, to stand with them, to understand the true enemy of all life.
His eyes found her, her alone, and once more he managed to smile.
Now I will die. I will fail. But I beg of you.
And his eyes glistened, and she saw that they were beautiful eyes, especially now.
A kiss. Many a woman cursed me in my youth, even as they loved me. It was glorious.
She saw the life draining from those eyes, and so she leaned forward to catch its leaving. With a soft kiss, his breath was of blood, his lips were cracked, but they were warm. She held that kiss as that warmth left, held it to give him as much of her as she could. Her brother pulled her away, held her in his arms the way he used to, when she was much younger, when she was not so guarded with her own body. They took the armor before leaving his body to the wild, and she claimed that armor for her own, for that kiss. And now she wanted it back. Hissing in frustration, Apsalara scanned the empty chamber. She was far beneath the ground floor of the palace. She was where they'd put her armor and her mace, the first time she'd been captured in their midst. They'd been amused by her. It was always that way, as if Carcanus held nothing worth stealing, as if the very idea of theft was too absurd to countenance. But someone had stolen her armor. Seething with outrage and indignation, she set out in search of it. All reason had left the face of their lord. Froth foamed the corners of his mouth as he screamed his rage, driving the ranks into the maw of the gate. And it was indeed a maw. Aparal Forge could see the truth of that. The fangs descended again and again. They chewed his people to bloody shreds and splintered bones. And this was an appetite without end. They could not push past, not a single damned step, denying the legions a foothold, a place into which their soul-taken masters could come, could veer and, in veering, at last shatter the opposition. The commander on the other side had anticipated them. Somehow he had known the precise moment at which to modify his tactics. Aparal watched the mangled bodies being pulled from the swirling maelstrom of the gate, watched the way those bodies floundered like wreckage, bobbing on human hands and shoulders, out to the deep trenches already heaped high with the dead. Apart from the elite companies, hardly any soldiers remained.
This iron mouth has devoured the population of an entire city. Look well, my soul-taken kin, and ask yourself, whom will you lord it over now? Who will serve you in your estates? Who will raise the food? Who will serve it? Who will make your fine clothes? Who will clean your shit buckets?
None of this was real, not anymore. And all the ordered precision of existence was now in shambles, a bloodied mess. There was nothing to discuss, no arguments to fling back and forth, no pauses in time to step back and study old tapestries on the walls and pray for the guidance of heroic ancestors. Saranus was destroyed, and when this was done, it would be as empty, as filled with ghosts as Carcanus.
Light finds the face of darkness, and lo, it is its own. Is this not what you wanted, Khadagar? But when you finally possess what you wanted, who, O Lord of Ghosts, who will sweep the floors?
And now at last the elite ranks were pushing up against the gate. All the fodder had been used up. Now then arrived the final battle. Aparal made his way down to where the wounded were being left, abandoned alongside the trenches. The chorus of their cries was horrible beyond measure. To enter this place was an invitation to madness, and he almost welcomed that possibility. He pushed past the staggering, dead-eyed cutters and healers, searching until he found one man, sitting cradling the stump of his left arm, the severed end of which trailed wisps of smoke. A man not screaming, not weeping, not yet reduced to a piteous wretch.
"Soldier, look at me!"
The head lifted. A shudder seemed to run through the man.
"You have been through the gate?"
A shaky nod.
"How many left among the enemy? How many left?"
"I could not be sure, Lord, but I think few."
"This is what we keep hearing, but what does that mean? 50? 5,000?
The soldier shook his head.
"Few, Lord. And, Lord, there is laughter. Hust weapons, soldier. Possessed blades. Tell me what is few."
The man suddenly bared his teeth, and then, with deliberation, he spat at Aparal's feet.
"All who return from the other side are subjects no longer. Mark this, Khadagar."
Aparal pointed at the legions now crowding the gate.
"More than them? Look, damn you!"
Dull eyes shifted, squinted.
"That, soldier, is 7,000, maybe 8. On the other side, as many? More? Less?"
When the man simply returned his stare, Aparal drew his sword.
"You have been through the gate. You have seen. Assess the enemy's strength."
The man grinned, eyes now on the weapon in Aparal's hand.
"Go ahead." "No, not you, soldier."
He waved with the blade of the sword, the gesture encompassing a score of other wounded.
"I will kill them one after another until you answer me. Do you not see, Lord, why we refuse you? You have already killed us, all of us. Surviving these wounds will not change that. Look at me. I am already dead. To you, to all the world. Now fuck off. Oh, better yet, take yourself through to the other side. See for—"
Aparal did not know where the rage came from, but the savage strength of his blow lifted the soldier's head from his neck, sent it spinning and then bouncing, until it fetched up against another wounded soldier, who turned her head, regarded it for a moment, then looked away again. Trembling, horrified by what he had done, Aparal Forge backed away. From one side he heard a weary chuckle, and then,
"Barely 1,000 left, Lord. They're done."
He twisted round, sought out the one who spoke. Before him was the trench piled with corpses.
"Is it the dead who now speak?"
"As good as,"
came the reply.
"You don't understand, do you? We don't tell you because we honor our enemy. They're not Tist and E. They're humans who fight like demons."
He saw the man now. Only the upper half of his body was visible, the rest buried under bodies. Someone had judged him dead. Someone had made a mistake. But then Aparal saw that half his skull was gone, exposing the brain.
"The Hust Legion.
Oh, you'd like that, wouldn't you? But there's no Hust Legion. There's one man, one Hust sword, slayer of dragons and slayer of hounds, slayer of 1,000 Leosan. One man. And when you finally break through, Lord, may he cut you down, you soul-taken, you betrayers, every one of you.
If you stood here, Caradhar Phant, if you stood here, you would finally see what we have done.
Aparal retreated, made his way towards the gate. Yes, he would push through. He would step out onto that foreign shore. And if he could, he would destroy this lone warrior.
And then it will be over. Because that is all I want now, for this to be over.
He spied a messenger corps, a dozen or so runners standing just beyond the nearest legion.
Words to my kin, he barked. Less than 1,000 remain on the other side, and there is but one man with a hust sword. Inform our lord. The time is now.
An end. Bless me, an end.
Sheathing his bloody sword, he fixed his gaze on the gate.
There,
he whispered.
Now.
Halfway across the bridge, Nimanda paused, stared at the keep's massive gates. The air was filling with smoke, and he could now hear the detonations. The sorcery of dragons, the Elaint doing what they did best. Destroying everything in their path. The return of the Tist Andi should not have been like this, in flames, in annihilation. He had felt his kin being torn away from him. They had veered over the outer marches. They had been flying in the company of Silana, to honor her, of all things. She was of the royal household now, or so Nimanda had wanted. Another foolish conceit. In draconic form, she was my father's lover, but that was long ago. But Anamanda Rake's hunger for awakening the blood of the Elaint within him had waned. Even when faced with the ruination of Moon's spawn, he had not surrendered to it. Nimanda could not even imagine the will that had denied such a gift. Above Pale, he could have killed Taishren. Korlat had said as much. He could have flown down from Moon's spawn, Silana at his side, and brought fire and devastation to the Malazans. The sudden descent of terror from the skies, scattering the enemy, shattering the opposition, arrayed against him. Instead, he waited, and when at last he veered into his draconic form, it was to save a different city.
He would have done so for Pale, if not for the betrayal.
But Korlat, it was only the mages who broke their vow, not the people of the city.
She had nodded then and looked across to her two companions, Prazek Ghul, who had once been Orphantal's swordmaster, and Dathana Phandoris, abandoned spawn from a high priestess and then, much later, Korlat's own mistress of assassination. The three of them, all that remained of his father's cadre of soul-taken dragons. Prazek had said,
No matter what, there would have been terrible destruction visited upon Pale. Had Anamanda Rake veered into a dragon, Taishren would have had no choice but to turn his fullest powers upon him. By the time the two were done, all of Pale would have been ashes. Instead, our lord descended into the city and hunted down those wizards, taking them one by one. So, in truth, he did indeed save Pale.
Although, added Dathanar, he could not have anticipated the revenge of the Moranth upon Pale's citizens.
The Malazans could have stopped that,
countered Prazek, and the three had nodded. Blinking, Nimanda drew a deep breath, pushing away that gnawing hunger within him, to veer, to rise up, to join the storm. Then he made his way across the bridge and into the palace. From the shadows of the entrance, Apsalara stepped out to block his path.
Lord Nimanda, there is a Tist Andi woman upon the throne.
So Korlat told me. She has bound Silana. I must convince her.
She is Korlat's mother, Lord. Once a hostage, now the Queen of High House Dark. But madness has taken her. It may be, Lord, that you will have to kill her.
What? Where is Spinnock?
Return to your legions. There is war upon the first shore. The Tist Leosans seek to invade, and those who oppose them are few.
There are other Tistandi? She shook her head. No, they are Shake.
Shake? The island prison? Gods, no.
He stood, his desires suddenly torn in two directions.
Make the queen yield, lord, said Apsalara. Spinnok will lead your people in battle.
She stepped closer, reached up and brushed Nimanda's cheek.
My love, do this.
I will not usurp the queen of High House Dark. Do we return only to spill Andean blood all over again? He shook his head in horrified denial. No, I cannot.
Then convince her to release Silana. The storm will be needed. To save Karkanas, to save the Sheik.
Come with me.
No, Nimanda. I will go to the first shore. I will fight. Find me there.
Her hand slipped behind his head now and drew his face down to her own. She kissed him hard and then pushed him away and was past him, out onto the bridge. The thunder of Silana's rage was drawing closer. Nimanda rushed inside. The elders and the young remained camped near the bank of the river, though Spinnok knew that before long they would have to retreat into the city, if Silana could not be stopped. Glancing back up the road, it seemed that half the sky was aflame. Forests were burning, the ground itself erupting into fountains of molten rock. He caught a dark shape sailing amidst the smoke. Drawing on his gauntlets, he faced his warriors and saw that all eyes were upon him. At Spinnok's back was the forest, and beyond it waited the first shore. They understood what was to come. He need tell them nothing. And yet,
Anamanda, old friend, do you now sit at your mother's side? Do you now look down upon us? Are you helpless, unable to reach across, to still Silana's savage fury? Or have you ceased to care?
Spinnok straightened, scanned the helmed faces before him. And then he drew his sword, caught the eye of Captain Irind, gestured the burly man forward.
Face to me your shield, Captain, and hold well your stance.
The man's eyes narrowed slightly, and then he took position, raising the shield between them and settling his shoulder beneath its rim, head turned away. Spinnok half turned, as if dismissing Irind, and then he whirled. The sword cracked hard against the shield, staggering the captain. The reverberation echoed out into the forest and then fell back like rain among the troops.
When he led you and your ancestors from this place, Spinnok said, pitching his voice loud enough to carry, though in truth a sudden silence had taken the scene, and it seemed not even the storm could reach through. From smoke, from fire, from ruin, Mother Dark had turned away. Before you, before your Lord Anamanda Rake, there was nothing.
Again his sword struck. Again Irind staggered but held his ground.
Prepare to advance. We will not form up once clear of the forest.
He bared his teeth.
There is no time for that. Captain Irind, stay at my side.
Spinnok led the way into the ancient wood. Behind him the ranks spilled out, order almost immediately broken by the boles of trees, by sinkholes and treefalls. The air was heavy with mists. Water streamed down every trunk, every branch, every dark-veined leaf. He raised his voice as he advanced, knowing that they would hear him, knowing that Mother Dark had given him this.
For her people, for this day, this most fraught day. Lord Nimanda has gone to the palace. He seeks to turn Silana from her path. What value winning the battle if we lose the war? If not for that, he would be here. He would be speaking to you, but he is not. And this time, this one time, it is well, for like many of you, I was born in this realm.
Irind was beside him, ready for the blow. The sword hammered the shield, the sound a shout of iron.
Lord Anamanda Rake led you to another world. He fought to give you purpose, a reason to live, and for many, in that he failed. But those of you here, for you, he did not fail.
He swung the sword again, the impact shivering up his arm.
He asked you to fight wars that were not yours to fight. He asked you to bow to causes not your own. 100 banners, 100 cities, allies who welcomed you and allies who did not. Allies who blessed you and allies who feared you. And your kin died. Oh, how they died. They gave up their lives in causes not their own.
The sword cracked again, and this time Irind almost buckled beneath the blow. Spinnok could hear his harsh breaths.
They were all different, and they were all the same. But the cause, the true cause he offered you, did not change.
The blow sent Irind to his knees. Another soldier moved up, readying his own shield. Bodily dragged Irind back and then took his place. The sounds from the advancing warriors behind Spinnok was a susurration. Breaths, armor, boots scrabbling for purchase.
Your lord was thinking, each and every time, he was thinking of this moment.
Again flashed the sword.
Each time, every time, the cause was just
crack.
He needed to keep reminding you for this day.
Crack.
Today, this is not foreign soil. Today, this cause is your own.
Crack.
Today, the Tistandi fight for themselves.
And this time, other weapons found the rims of shields.
Crack. Your home.
Crack.
Your kin.
Crack. The sword shivered in his hand. The soldier stumbling beside him fell away. His shield split. Gasping, Spinnok Dorav pushed on.
Anamanda Rake, do you witness this? Do you look into these faces, all these faces behind me? This time, strangers fight in your name. Strangers die for you. Your cause, not theirs.
Crack. The reverberation shoved him forward, shivered through him like something holy.
Children of Dark, humans are dying in your name.
Crack. The very air trembled with that concussion. A torrent of water, clinging to high branches, to needles and leaves, shook loose and rained down in an answering hiss. Ahead, Spinnok could hear fighting.
Do you see, Anamanda? Old friend, do you see? This is our war.
Crack. Through the bowls a glimmer of falling light, a vast shape lifting high, the sudden roar of a dragon.
Gods, no! What have they done?
Crack. Anamanda Rake entered the throne room. Sandalath Drukorlat stared at him, watching as he strode towards her. His voice held a hint of thunder outside.
Release, Ilana!
Where is your sword?
The Son of Darkness drew up momentarily, brow clouding. One hand brushed the grip of the weapon slung at his belt.
Not that one, she said. The Slayer of Draconis. Show me his sword.
Highness!
Stop that! This throne is not mine, it is yours. Do not mock me, Lord. They said you killed him. They said you cut him down.
I have done no such thing, Highness.
A sudden thought struck her.
Where is Orphantal? You took him to stand at your side. Where is my son? My beloved son? Tell me!
He drew closer. He looked so young, so vulnerable, and that was all wrong.
Ah, this is much earlier. He has not yet killed the consort. But then, who am I?
Release Ilana, Sandalath Drukorlat. The storm must be freed. The destruction of Karkanis will make all the deaths meaningless.
Meaningless, yes. It is what I've been saying all along. It's all meaningless, and I am proving it.
He was standing before her now, his eyes level with her own.
Korlat!
A shriek shattered his next words. Sandalath recoiled, and only then realized that the cry had been torn from her own throat.
Not yet! Where is Orphantal? Where is my beloved son?